Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, we're going to discuss a few current events in the short term rental space. But first, wanted to remind you guys that we are hiring in several markets for agents: the Smokies, the Poconos, Myrtle Beach, Hilton Head, Orlando, and anywhere else that I may not have listed that is a mature vacation market that you might be an agent in, that you think might be a good fit for the short-term shop. We want to hear from you. Email us at info@theshorttermshop.com and we will connect. And also, don't forget our very affordable mentorship program that we just launched that Chuck, who is our guest today, is a coach on. It's called Short-Term Shop Plus. You can learn more about that on stsplus.com. And without further ado, we'll get right into the episode. How's it going today, Chuck?
Going great, especially for Monday.
Yes. It's not too bad, you know. Chuck and I have both overindulged in a Dongfang cheesecake. Wow, I just totally screwed that up. Dongfang king cakes. Luke and I went to, almost said Orlando. What's wrong with me? I've recorded several podcasts this morning, so I'm all tongue-tied. Went to New Orleans over the weekend, and I sourced all of the top local recommendations for the bakeries that make the best king cakes. And so we went to all of them. We got about 10 different kinds to test to see which one was going to be the best. And it was Dongfang by like far and away the best. So we brought one to Chuck and they're so good.
Yeah. I'm on a sugar rush right now for sure.
So yeah, I didn't have one yet this morning. I'm intermittent fasting, but I did have enough last night to probably warrant intermittent fasting for much longer of a period today. So good. It's the best. So anyway, yeah. Enough about us. All right, Chuck. So what we're talking about today, and guys, I'm going to make a disclaimer here. Chuck and I are going to go over an article about how the second Trump administration can affect short-term rentals, the article on AirDNA. Chuck and I don't care what your politics are. A short-term shop does not care about what your politics are. We're not here to impose our politics, nor will we even say what they are. We are just reporting the news, basically. I don't know. So anyway, we love you no matter what. This is not a political episode, even though we are going to talk about the new presidency. So just wanted to disclaim that. We love all of you. You have anything to add to that, Chuck?
No, you hit the nail on the head with it. I mean, it doesn't matter. This is it's a business discussion.
Yep. All right. So now that disclaimer is out there, so Chuck actually came across this article on AirDNA about how the previous Trump administration affected short-term rentals and how it could affect short-term rental investing this round. So last time we had the curveball of COVID, but there were some economic policies, according to this article, that shaped short-term rental demand. Fiscal stimulus packages was one of them. A lot of people who were buying short-term rentals, that $1,800 or whatever it was, probably did not directly influence them buying. But once you inject that much money into the economy, it finds its way up. So that indirectly spurred demand for investing in real estate. Also, of course, the low interest rates, because we had a lot of economic uncertainty, so the rates go low. When we don't have economic uncertainty, the rates are typically higher because they are based on that 10-year treasury yield. Chuck, do you have anything to add to that? Did I get that right?
You got it perfect.
Cool. Just fact check me, because I already said cheesecake and Orlando when I meant to say king cake in New Orleans. So make it screw it up. All right. This one, I'm not sure. Immigration policies led to hospitality labor shortages. So during Trump's first term, stricter immigration policies reduced the immigrant labor pool from 300,000-ish to as low as 180. And this shortage in the critical workforce for hospitality drove up wages, increasing operational costs for short-term rental hosts. I did not experience that in my personal business, but maybe other people did. Did you, Chuck?
Not in this respect. you know, and at the time I was only in the Smokies market, at least the early part of that administration, and not a lot of immigrant labor was up there at that point in time.
Yeah. You know,
it just wasn't a big, was not a big part of the local workforce. So we weren't seeing that.
Yeah.
Now I would certainly have guessed in urban markets, you know, cities, Atlanta, you know, New Orleans, or even Orlando, certainly anything that's in the Southeast or Southwest. I could definitely see that. I'm having a hard time finding you know, references to these numbers to be exact. And I think there's other issues here. It's not just the reduction in the immigration pool that drove up the labor prices, but all these new short-term rentals coming online. And the change that we saw throughout the his administration, as well as into the next and since then, of the traditional 7-day, Saturday to Saturday, Sunday to Sunday kind of thing, breaking up with the new Airbnb model of you can rent 2, 3, or 4 days. When we came into the beach market, you know, it was, you know, you live here, it was a Saturday to Saturday thing for years.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
The nice thing about that for the property managers was much of their housekeeping labor had other jobs during the week and then would come and do this on the weekend for extra money. And that completely went out the window when all of a sudden it's no longer Saturday to Saturday.
Definitely in a market like this, I think that that's true.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Shop Plus. Are you looking for someone to help you analyze a deal? Do you want instant access to lectures on management and short-term rental success? Join Short-Term Shop Plus for all of your vacation rental needs. STS Plus is open to the public and offered for the first time at a tremendous value. Also included is world-famous Management Monday, a weekly live session with everything you need to know about setting up your property and learning how to manage from a distance. Join today at stsplus.com. That's stsplus.com.
Another thing, economic policies of the previous administration, previous Trump administration, not immediately previous administration, reduced corporate taxes, which encouraged investments in real estate, including short-term rentals, creating a more favorable environment for property owners. Mm-hmm. So, however, rising property values and interest rates during this period also created barriers to entry for many would-be short-term rental investors. So basically, it's saying it made it more attractive for funds to and entities to invest in short-term rentals, which I'll agree with. I will agree with that.
Yeah, and not just invest, but in the traditional sense that you and I invest, but large developers. I mean, remember, we started seeing developments go up strictly for the purpose of short-term rentals. And a lot of that was encouraged by the extra cash that they had to invest, I guess invest, you know, in the initial development of it. But, you know, they don't keep them and run them. They build them, sell them, and move on to the next one. And then we also saw people spend a lot of money on attractions and the things that bring people to a particular area. Look at the growth in the Smokies. Look at all the extra building that went on, you know, it started up in Orlando, Vegas. A lot of that was driven by this extra cash they suddenly have by the lower corporate tax rate.
Totally agree. And we saw all kinds of like new attractions pop up in the Smokies too, like that dig theme park where kids can go use the construction equipment and dig. I haven't made it up there to take Nash, but I mean, he will just die. Lots of attraction development too.
Yeah. And, you know, we got to think back here. I mean, during his first, remember, Anacostia is not that old. And really the Skywalk Bridge there in Gatlinburg is not that old.
Yeah.
We saw that big development go on just off of the parkway there in right near the Sevierville Pigeon Forge line. The Soquel Mountain Water Park didn't start until early 2019 because the construction continued through COVID. So many of those things came in pre-COVID. But they were able to do it because they had the money to spend on it, the tax incentives.
So. All right. So let's move on to AirDNA's opinion on how the second Trump administration could impact short-term rentals. With Trump back in office, short-term rental hosts should prepare for new Airbnb regulatory challenges. I think that's very market-specific, very regional. Challenges could include potential federal oversight of booking platforms, as well as zoning compliance. None of that particularly concerns me. Does that concern you?
No, not really. And I think that's probably related to more like the junk fee laws. You know, transparency and pricing, and that's coming. I mean, that has, I don't think that has anything to do with his administration. It's been coming for a while. It'll happen.
All right.
There's great bipartisan support for that.
I mean, I get it. That seems reasonable.
Yeah. And California already has it. Four other states are voting on it this year. If it doesn't happen at the federal level, it would happen in all 50 states. So,
yeah. All right, then. Nothing to be too concerned about yet. So elevated interest rates will exacerbate short-term rental investment challenges. So that is 1,000% true. Also, maybe it can be related to this. I mean, we've had high interest rates for 2 years now, but they're expected to remain elevated through 2025 as the Federal Reserve continues its effort to curb inflation. So a lot of the policies that I have heard that Trump wants to reinstate, while they are typically very pro real estate investor, they are also very inflationary, which means that I think a lot of people were expecting Trump to get in office. Oh, he's a real estate guy. He's going to make the real estate market work better. But what a lot of these policies are going to do is actually keep the rates high because it's going to keep inflation high.
Now, even if you go back and you look at mortgage rates during his first administration, they actually went up during most of the first 3 years. And it wasn't until the last year that they came down precipitously, almost in half, in fact. I mean, we were teasing 2.5, 2.6%. Somewhere in that range, with all the money floating around, with policies in effect to put, you know, to cut taxes, put more money in people's pocket, they're going to spend it. We're going to see some more inflation, but hopefully we see wage inflation as well, you know, to counter that, so that in effect people have more money to spend. This article is kind of hinting at that as well.
Yeah,
that, you know, people will have more discretionary income.
Time will tell, I guess, on that. And here I am. I'm about to inject my own opinion here. But I do think that now it specifically says elevated interest rates will exacerbate STR investment challenges, meaning it's more difficult for more people to get into the short-term rental space, which is good if you're somebody who has the ability to get in now. Because if you go back and listen to Chuck and I's last episode that we did together, where the tide is kind of going out on a lot of those markets that really saw a steep run up in supply. A lot of those have gone down from like, you know, a 20% increase in supply year over year to like less than 6. So a lot of those markets that everybody was really not happy with, like Joshua Tree, Orlando, the ones that have really taken a beating, now that the supply growth has kind of moved out of those, they're now becoming an opportunity again. The reason for that is because the tourism is still there. So you're not seeing that huge increase in supply that's caused some of the saturation concerns over the years. A lot of that's kind of steadily going away. But the one thing that doesn't change is the tourism to these areas. So you're seeing these places that were on these top places to invest lists 5 years ago, then they dropped off, and then now they're kind of coming back because the tourism has remained stable. Now, what does that have to do with rates? Well, I'm not saying you have to invest in any one market, but if you're somebody who can get in there now, you have a lot less competition in terms of other buyers. You're able to get better deals. The people who are listing right now are typically more have-to sellers than just want-to sellers. So if you can do it, I'm going to make a bold claim, Chuck. I think that 10 years from now, people are going to talk about 2023 and 2024 the same way we talk about 2008 now. And oh, crap, why didn't I get in there then? Because there was so much available and you can get discounts these days. So, And I've said it 100 times. I'm going to say it one more time. Say it 101 times on this show. Fewer homes were sold in 2023 and 2024 than the last 65 years of the real estate market. So everybody talks about 2008 being, oh, I missed the boat. All those memes about, oh, man, I hate that I should have been buying real estate in 2008 instead of, like, you know, playing basketball in fourth grade or whatever. So it's always a good time to buy. It's always a bad time to buy too. So whichever way you can twist it to whichever thing you actually want to do. If you're too scared to buy, you're going to find a reason for it to be the bad time. If you're ready to go and you're ready to rock and roll and become an entrepreneur, you're going to find a way to make it work. So anyway, we don't see rates coming down. Anything to add to that, Chuck?
No, you said it all.
Maybe too much. Okay, they say reduced immigration and wage growth in the hospitality sector will help. I mean, again, we didn't see a lot of that in our businesses previously, so no, I can't really speak to that. But stronger real GDP growth. So real GDP growth is projected to outpace previous forecasts, with rates expected to reach 2 to 2.25% in the near term. While slight dips may occur by late 2025, as fiscal and monetary policies stabilize, growth is set to accelerate again by 2026. So what does that mean for short-term rentals?
Yeah, I mean, in the long run, it's good for us because GDP tends to drive wage growth. Wage growth drives discretionary income. Discretionary income is what we live off of for the most part in vacation markets. Again, urban, you know, there is a difference between vacation and urban markets. They have different economic factors, but, you know, on the vacation side where the short-term shop is focused on primarily, we're going to see more spending as GDP rises.
Don't hate that.
No, not at all. And of course, you know, there is a relationship between the GDP growth and employment numbers. So we'll see, you know, unemployment numbers go down. We may see people even choose to re-enter the workforce and, you know, perhaps in some parts of the country even be forced to re-enter the workforce, you know, for to counter inflation. But that's, again, that's good for everyone. It keeps wages under control.
We like discretionary spending.
Yeah.
In the hospitality business.
Yeah. You know, one of the things they kind of left out of here is the population migration pattern within the country.
True.
It's been going on. It's been actually fairly consistent if you go back and look at it for about 12 years now. But it picked up a little bit during that administration. It picked up even more going in the same directions during COVID and the 4 years since then. But the real question is, where is it going to go the next 4 years? The reason that makes a difference to us is that changes the workforce again. You know, if you got a million people picking up from one area of the country and moving to another, you've just added a million workers, give or take, because they're not all retirees.
Right.
So you've increased the workforce in one area, decreased it in another. That also affects taxes, can affect real estate prices. It affects everything. So directly or indirectly, but we need to pay attention to those too.
If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us. If you want to buy a short-term rental in one of the best vacation markets in America, you're looking for the Short-Term Shop. They are the experts in the vacation rental space. Their team of realtors are fantastic. And if you use the Short-Term Shop to buy your home, you'll have access to free classes with me to teach you how to get your property up and running. Join us at theshorttermshop.com, brokered by EXP.
Well, all right. So moving down, like kind of the conclusion of this article kind of echoes what I just said. So the housing market outlook overall, high mortgage rates haven't slowed housing prices in markets with lots of short-term rentals. That is true. It hasn't slowed housing prices in a lot of markets. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, we're waiting for the crash. Well, guys, we've been in it, but you didn't notice because you were waiting for a price drop that didn't happen.
Right.
Housing prices are expected to plateau. This is a good sentence, guys. Housing prices are expected to plateau rather than decline because strong demand and limited supply in, highlight this, I've been preaching this for 10 years, sought after locations keep the prices resilient. Limited, strong demand and limited supply in sought after locations keep these prices resilient. So what have I been saying? What, not just me, a lot of people have been saying since the get-go with short-term rentals, and it's not this, let's go buy where nobody's bought before, buy in the sought after vacation destinations. So thank you, AirDNA, for supporting my viewpoint.
you know, it's something else that, and they only touched on it in this article. As you move down a little bit, they talked about international travel patterns, and how that's expected to pick up. But international travel was at a near all-time high during the last administration, and that had to do, amongst many other things, with the value of the dollar in the world. And that's something I don't think we've paid enough attention to over the last few years. But that's a big impact. That will have a big impact on markets like Orlando. It's one of the reasons that the Orlando market is still not fully recovered from COVID is the international travel is still down significantly. The dollar has been fairly strong, which makes it more expensive for people to travel here. And the number of people coming in from South American countries is still less than 50% of what it was in 2017, based on some numbers I saw off the Orlando tourism site. So if he has the right kind of policies in place and, you know, between taxes and other things, we can get the dollar to be not quite as strong. It's like a little bit too strong in the world right now. Then we can start to see more international travel to all of our destinations. So,
and that.
More people, right? More people. So.
And what is it about Orlando that attracts so many international travelers? Is it just Disney?
Disney is the main draw. Yes. I don't think there's any question about it. And Disney in the past, I hope they continue, has done a great job at cultivating these groups. When you've been to the parks a lot, but I don't know what you did during the like late teens. But if you were in the parks in January, February, what you would think would be the slow times back in, say, 17, 18, 16, they were packed. And they were packed with groups walking around with the little flags and everybody wearing the same T-shirts. They did a great job of turning the slow season into the big season. And I had no end of people that I would know, either close friends or acquaintances, who would tell me, hey, I came because I thought it wouldn't be crowded. And I waited in line longer than I did in July. They did a really good job at that. And Orlando did too. You know, the tourism board, the tourism group there in Orlando, putting together these packages, doing outreach advertising in these other countries. It became a rite of passage in like Brazil for teens, especially girls, to come in a large organized group done by a tour group to Disney. And they do 3 or 4, maybe 5 days in Disney. They do a day or two at Universal. And usually their last day or their last full day would be spent at Florida Mall or Millennium Mall so they could shop for the American goods that they can't get back home. You learn what days of the week not to go shopping there.
So. I saw a TikTok recently. There was a girl who was posting the 20 things, my American shopping haul. And the number one thing they were most excited about was Tide pins.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
All right. I didn't know you couldn't get that everywhere.
No, you can. It's amazing. And, you know, for a long time, it was Apple gear. You know, like you couldn't, there's two Apple stores like 5 miles apart in Orlando. I don't think other than maybe San Francisco or New York, do you see that? And they were always busy. The tour groups were always there and they were walking out with bags full of stuff, things they couldn't get at home. So, but that international tourism will drive more, not just more rentals, because these are larger groups. So they want to stay in larger places. We have an opportunity to grab that, especially if you've got, a larger home in one of those Orlando 12 bedroom places. Mm-hmm. That presents some really good opportunities. In other markets, we used to see a lot of British and French folks come in, including the Smokies. That's been way down. They're dealing with other issues right now, and hopefully the Ukraine issue gets worked out. But I'm very bullish about the international travel during this next administration.
Coming back. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's not putting it on any one person or any one party. It's just that, you know, we're kind of changing the focus a little bit, different priorities. And I think those priorities have to be in line with increasing those things.
All right. And I think that was really it for this article before we switch gears. Do you have anything else you want to touch on? I mean, I think here's my take after I just asked you what your take was. My take, I think we will probably see the real estate market start to get a little bit better, not a lot better, but a little bit just because all the big wait and sees are over. They wanted to wait and see what happens when the Fed drops rates. Well, nothing happened to the real estate market. The interest rates stayed the same, and they wanted to see who was going to be president. Now we know we can act accordingly for the next 4 years. So I think that all those people who are waiting to see, to make decisions, will stop waiting and seeing and buy or not. So I also feel the same. I think we're not calling it a recession, but I think we're in one. Like the discretionary spending is down. I think we'll probably start to see that slowly come back. But what are your thoughts here?
Well, let's not forget, you know, credit card debt is being reported at an all-time high.
Didn't know that.
So consumer credit card debt, you know, and that's got a lot to do with it. I think people have stretched for a while and they're to a point they can't stretch anymore. Gotcha. Or at least don't feel comfortable doing it. You know, you mentioned early on, you know, the mortgage rates tend to follow the bond market more than they do the Fed rates, although they're all somewhat interconnected. With a really strong dollar, there's still a lot of international money coming into T-bills. So, you know, and that's propping up the T-bill rates, which in turn is propping up the mortgage rates. If we can calm the dollar down a little bit and, you know, use other things, you know, perhaps get back to exporting some more fossil fuels or, you know, something along that line, which had a lot to do with some of the effects in his last term, then we might start to see the bond market go down, the T-bill rate go down, which in turn will, you know, push mortgage rates down a little bit. It wouldn't hurt if they drop a point or two. It'd be nice just to spur that on. Give people a chance to get out of properties they feel locked into because they've got a 2.5% or 3% interest rate.
So. Yeah, I read yesterday 73% of all mortgages are under 6%. So not, I think we kind of have convinced ourselves that 73% of all mortgages are under 3% because of just how excited everybody got about those rates. But it's under 5%. Or whatever I just said. Now I've confused myself. But so we really just need them to get to like 6 even. Mm-hmm. 6 even, I think, is a manageable jump from having a 5% rate or a 4.5% rate to a 6%. But having one of the people who have a 2.5, you know, it's not manageable. And right now people who have a 4.5, 5% rate jumping to a 7, that's not manageable even to downgrade or even to make a lateral move. So I think that if it just gets to 6, then I think we'll see a lot more movement, a lot of things shaking loose.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this goes back to simple math. You know, your first few years, most of your payments are interest, right? Well, if the interest rate is double what you're paying, the payment's going to be almost double what you're paying. For this, if you were to move from the same value property into another one, keep your loan the same. You know, if you're going to net 500 out of your property, but you're going to spend 500 more on the new one, your rate's going to double your monthly rate payment's going to double or triple. So we've got to keep that in mind. It's not just, you know, 5% versus 6% or 7%. It's that 7% is almost 50% higher than 5%.
And I think a lot of people are not thinking about that when they're like, oh, look at how much equity I have. It would take me 10 years in rental income from this property to reach this amount of equity. That means I should sell. And so then they sell. Like, we've had a client recently who sold a beautiful place. And then when they went to 1031 exchange, saw that the places that they wanted to, when they started looking for places to buy in the 1031 exchange and realizing and talking to their loan officer exactly what that payment was going to look like, then they got some pretty serious seller's remorse on selling their subject property. And I get it. Like, I get the argument. It's a very reasonable argument that if you aren't going to make in rental income in the over the next 10 years, the amount of equity that you have, I get it, but there's more to it than that. And, you know, as everybody says, the best time to buy real estate was always 30 years ago or yesterday. Second best time is today. So why would you take your real estate from yesterday at yesterday's prices and yesterday's everything and get rid of that and shift yourself into today where it's much harder to find a deal? And even when you do, you're, like you just said, 700 might be the payment on a $700,000 property is going to be, you know, over double. Mm-hmm. What you paid for a $500,000 property. So there's more to look at than just your equity versus your income there. And I think I've seen a number of people wish they hadn't done that. So yep. make sure, guys, before you do that, that you pay attention to what that payment is going to be.
Yep. And, you know, I also get the drive to want to tap into that equity. I mean, it's, you know, it's like your savings account. It's your investment income. You just haven't received it yet. But there's other ways to do that. And I'm not necessarily even talking about HELOCs, you know, or home equity loans. I've personally made good use of leveraging the equity as towards another loan. So I didn't lose the equity. I still had the equity. I wasn't paying interest on it. It was just used to secure another property. I've done that in three cases now. And you can do that with when you're dealing with a small institution on a commercial loan. They're usually more than happy. It's pretty common in the commercial area, in fact. You know, I used $300K in equity on one loan to basically satisfy the property, not a loan, but to satisfy the loan to value ratio on a new one I was buying. That's the one that I famously walked out of closing with a $25,000 check in my pocket. you can do that. And I've done that at least twice since then. But you're not going to do it by going to Bank of America, you know, or Chase or you know, LendingTree. You're going to have to go to, you know, Fifth Corner Bank of, you know, Wichita or something like that and talk to their commercial guy.
Yep.
Yep.
Those local banks, they come in handy. I think there's a time and a place for them for sure. And
absolutely.
Yeah. We've got one that we use for all of our long terms and like, you can't beat the rate and just the flexibility of it. But I mean, you also can't walk in there super green, never having bought a property before, not knowing what you're doing and expect for them to give you a loan. So it's definitely a relationship business.
Yep. Yeah. And reputation.
All right. Well, Chuck, let's close this one out. So Chuck, anything else related to the outlook with the new administration and short-term rentals that you think we need to discuss, or have we pretty much covered it all?
No, I think we pretty much covered it all. I mean, a parting thing might be that we know in general, the party that that is going to be controlling, you know, both sides of that, of the Congress and as well as the White House, is not big on regulation. So I think at the federal level, we're probably not going to worry too much about that kind of stuff anymore. We were starting to see a little creep with the last one. Nothing I'm worried about. It'll strictly be at the local level. And we'll deal with that on a future podcast.
All right, then. Well, guys, thanks for listening. Great episode today, Chuck. Thank you so much for coming on. And we will see y'all next time.